in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
There we go. Right, hello, welcome to episode 244 of the Self-Help Podcast. You just had a notification come in there, Sean. That distracted me.
No, that was from our good mate David O'Brien, who was talking about the previous podcast. It was like a mess.
I gave it a little like on LinkedIn. Yeah. Do you put the stuff on LinkedIn, do you?
I do occasionally.
I wasn't even aware. Yeah, we use that. But we do have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Yeah. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. If you're new to the show, take a look, get to know us a bit better. Send us an email if you'd like us to discuss a specific topic, as was the case this week. We're talking about grief this week. But we're going to keep it chirpy, right? Light-hearted.
As much as you can.
As much as you can. Yeah, we're talking about death. So some serious stuff, but we'll dive into that shortly. If you go to the website and stick your email address in the box, we'll send you weekly alerts for the show. You'll get a discount code for the book and some free meditation files as well.
And as we're recording, Ree is sending messages saying this book would be a really good book for people dealing with grief.
Ah, okay, another resource.
Because that's the world that she deals with a lot, because a lot of her patients are suffering from cancer, or they're the relatives of.
Yeah, counselling for folks with cancer, man, blimey.
So this is called Grief's Courageous Journey, so we'll stick that in on the notes.
We'll put that in the notes, as obviously we'll be putting some resources up and plenty of links as well. How are you doing, Sean? How's tricks?
I'm okay. I've had a really interesting time since we were last together.
Interesting. That usually means you're running around tearing your hair out.
No. What happened was, you may have noticed over the last... Dear listeners, you may have noticed over the last few months my voice has been a bit gravelly. Mm-hmm. I've been starting to sound like Barry White. Hi there, how are you doing? And so I thought I'd better go and get something done about it. So I took it down to the doctors and said, oi. And he sent me off to a man with a camera.
And he said, oi to him.
Who wanted to play games with sticking cameras down my throat and gave up and ended up sticking the camera down my nose, which is really interesting. Right the way down your nose into your voice box. That's really, really good.
Wow.
And he told me that I had nothing sinister in there, there's nothing to worry about. But I had something which I'd never heard of before called silent reflux.
Okay.
Which is when you go to bed, you can reflux. And the trick I discovered is don't finish work about 9 or 10 o'clock. Go and cook a meal, have a glass of wine, then go to bed.
Okay.
Because that's when you get silent reflux. I didn't know it was happening.
It was happening because you're working too late and...
No, eating too late.
Eating too late.
Yeah. The rule is... You can't eat 3 hours before you lie down.
Yeah, I had heard that as a general bit of advice.
Yeah, whereas I just kind of work crazy, eat crazy, you know, so I had to do a bit of adaptions. But one of the things is when you read around overcoming the silent reflux stuff, then it's no chocolate, no caffeine, no alcohol.
Chime nicely with your detox that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually drinking a cup of coffee because you just made me one.
Yeah, we haven't got any... Decaf in at the moment. So.
Terrible.
We'll sort that for next week, I promise. All right, okay.
So, interesting times, but maybe I'll stop sounding like I'm singing the blues.
We've been getting a lot more female listeners on board recently, so now we know why. So, keep it going.
Barry White, look out.
I've been down to Cheltenham at the weekend. Little shout out for that town. Nice part of the world.
Beautiful.
We got some friends that moved down there a year ago. We have been to see them last summer, but we thought, well, no, they've just had a kid fairly recently, so I went to get to know the little fella a bit better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a cool town, isn't it?
Yeah, Cheltenham and Gloucester, either side of the motorway.
Gloucestershire.
Yeah. It's nice.
I remember last year we did go, there's an outdoor swimming pool, the Lido. Lido, no, would you say?
Lido. You say Lido.
Sorry, itching to get back there.
Yeah.
But a lovely little weekend away.
Yeah. You have to go in the summer for the Lido.
Definitely. Leader. It opens in March, apparently.
Yeah. But for the brave people.
Yeah, for those that are brave enough.
Yeah. But right. you can just nip up to the Cotswolds and it's gorgeous.
5-minute drive, apparently, to the the outskirts of it. It's quite a big area, the Cotswolds, right?
Boughton on the Water, that's the place to go.
Boughton on the Water,
that's
okay.
Gorgeous.
I did Google it. Amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Very cool. Right, this week we're chatting about grief. And we received an email, didn't we, from a listener?
Yep.
Do you want to explain a bit more without giving any too much detail?
Well, it's someone who has just lost a parent and before Christmas, and is feeling the issues of grief and trying to come to terms with that.
Yeah, so it's still very raw then. Yeah, it's quite...
Well, let's start off with the rule of thumb that we use in psychospeak, which is the two-year rule. And when people go through any kind of change, whether it is a loss as in a death, whether it's a loss as in a limb, whether it is a loss as in retirement or redundancy, anything like that, it usually takes a two-year period to come to terms with it. Wow. And that's because...
That's assuming that you're putting the work in.
No, just generally. If you start off with the ending... You know, it might be the funeral, it might be the leaving work, whatever it is. And then you go through Christmas, birthdays, anniversary, so you come right the way back to that day again. Take a deep breath, you do it again. And by the time you've been around twice, most people have started to process.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's changed. But it's that order of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have people who have gone through a massive change, and it could be a loss of a parent, and 3 months down the line, they're saying to me, there's something wrong with me, I'm still upset, I'm still keep crying about it, and I think you're just at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years is that period to get yourself starting to get straight. It could be 5 years before you're straight.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems is very often people have one death stacked on top of another, so they haven't managed to process one and another one happens.
Yeah.
So I worked with someone recently who had lost both parents within about 8 weeks of each other. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's tough because you're reeling from one and then the other one jumps at you.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so first point is then if it is early stages.
Yeah.
Because we are kind of taught, aren't we, to get on and move on with things quite quickly. And
that's the good British, you stiff up a little.
Something bad's happened in your life. It's like, okay, you're going to need time out to process this, but a couple of months, pew, back on your feet, let's crack on.
Yeah.
But not so.
No. And it's the typical British thing about you don't show your emotion.
Yeah.
So, and my classic is, if you go to a funeral in the East, people rent their clothes, they root, they wail, as they get out of their system. In Britain, we dress in black and walk like penguins behind a box,
mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone is very stiff upper lip and holds it in.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't celebrate the life, we kind of mourn the death.
And we don't let go of the emotion. It's not okay to go, you know, it's almost as though you're letting the side down if you're emotional, whereas we need to be emotional.
You know? Kind of funny how these things crop up, just when I kind of need, looking for some inspiration and things to talk about in an episode last week. It was, you know, in the news quite a bit. There's a chap called Simon Thomas, who was a Blue Peter presenter back in the day, but then went on to Sky Sports, quite a high profile presenter. I'm sure you'll recognise him if you see a picture of his face, but his wife Gemma died last November, 3 days after being diagnosed with a very rare form of leukemia.
Wow, 3 days?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know, I'm assuming she kind of had a couple of warning signs and then by the time realised what was going on, too late. But Simon's got a blog called agriefshared.com,
right.
And he put a post out on 29th of January, a few days from where we are now,
right.
Basically telling the world how much he's struggling, because he's got a lad, I think just one son, kind of 7 or 8 years old, that he's trying to keep it together for, but he felt he needed to write, get his thoughts down and share it with the world, do this positive thing, and really open about how much he's struggling. So he's not kind of even, I don't know what stage he's at. In your blog post, you talk about a few stages of grief, don't you?
Yeah, and they don't always follow in sequence like this, but usually the first stage of a loss like that is disbelief.
Yeah.
And it actually coming to terms with the fact that it's happened. That feeling that the person's going to ring or going to walk through the door, you go to ring them, you know, that kind of stuff. That stage in itself can be months,
mm-hmm.
You know, longer. Second stage is usually an emotional outpouring, as in letting go of the grief And generally the crying bit, which lots of people need to do in private because we don't do it in public.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the problems is when people do cry, we don't say, come on, get it out. We know, oh, stop, 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 have a cup of tea. We do the reverse thing, so we stop people letting go of it. And the third stage is anger. And people get angry with God, with doctors, with disease. They get angry with the person who's died, then they feel guilty, then they go around in a circle. But it's usually the anger, which is the energy that gets people to move on.
Hmm. Yeah. Can those three different stages take different, come in different waves? Because if your 35, 40-year-old partner or son or daughter dies suddenly, you might get angry earlier because than, say, your 18, 19-year-old parent, which, you know... No, you're not going to be happy when they pass away, but it's going to happen. You know, you're going to have at least some clue that it's going to be happening soonish.
But I've seen things where
they could both die of exactly the same disease.
Yep.
But you would be angry at the 35-year-old's one, and not so much at the 90-year-old's, wouldn't you?
Yeah. What happens when? Yeah, it's true. So what happens when your mum's died, and maybe she died when you were 30 or 25, and then you get married? And she's not at your wedding. So that there's two emotions that can hit in quite hard. One is that the sadness and the sense of loss. And the other one is the anger. Why aren't you here?
Yeah.
You know, why did you abandon me? Why did you go? That kind of stuff. And people will say that thing to me. And they will say, logically, I know this is stupid to say it because it's crazy saying it. But actually, that's what I feel like. I feel like I've been abandoned, let down, lost, whatever. And then there's the guilt for feeling that about, you know, that's what I mean, it goes round in a circle.
Mm-hmm. And but this is stuff you've, it needs to go round in circles for sometimes.
Yeah.
In order to spin out of control and you can say goodbye to it.
See, one of the other things is, I mentioned it in the blog, is that I see cases where somebody, maybe their mother dies, and they take the morning off work to deal with it, come back to work. And then 2 weeks later, they take the morning off work to go to a funeral and then come back to work. And everybody says, how heartless is that? You know, they must be, you know, horrible, mean people kind of stuff. But the issue for me is that we're connected to other people by emotion, and that's like a piece of elastic. And if that elastic is thick and strong, when it breaks, there's a lot of emotion that's released in it. And sometimes the elastic never breaks because someone is on the other side of the grave, as it were. It still pulls.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the elastic is thin and floppy and a bit kind of perished and doesn't really mean very much, when the person dies and the elastic is cut, there's virtually no emotion there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be because of the nature of the relationship in someone dying, or it could be that someone has died over a long period of time. So that the example you gave there of a diagnosis and then 3 years later, three days later, you've got a death. It's like, wow, that's a shock. It's almost like an accident, bang, dead.
Yeah, it's similar.
There's no processing time. If someone dies over a period of months or maybe a couple of years, very often people have done their grieving in installments. And by the time you get to the death point, when the body actually stops working, people get confused because they might actually feel a sense of relief.
Right.
Yeah? For a variety of reasons, it might be that they're relieved that the person is no longer in pain, or it might be that that person has taken up an extraordinary amount of their life and they've been looking after them and trying to look after kids and whatever else, and suddenly they haven't got to do it anymore and there's a sense of relief. Yeah? But then there's the guilt of having the relief. So it goes round, and, you know, it's a tough stuff. You know,
yeah.
When we're trying to deal with it. But it's one of those things where one size doesn't fit all. It's so different for so many
people. Yeah, exactly. That every death is different.
Yeah.
Every relationship with that person that's passed away is different, isn't it? So what is the goal? Let's say that we're talking to a specific listener here. If a parent's passed away, an elderly parent, who, what is the goal? It's not, I'm assuming, the goal isn't to forget about that person, is it? The goal is to kind of not be upset all day, every day, but still be able to enjoy the memories
I think you said it earlier on about, are we celebrating a life or mourning a death? Yeah, we celebrate birth like crazy. we should be celebrating death as well. Yeah, because one of the things you said before we went on air is we're all going to die, and that's true, you know.
Yeah, why aren't we better at dealing with this yet? Like, it's like the only certain thing in life, isn't it? Billions and billions taxes. Of people have lived and died, yeah. And taxes too, apparently.
Yeah.
But we still struggle with this, don't we?
Yeah.
Which proves that it's obviously a big deal.
But I think that we've lost touch with death. Death doesn't happen in the home like it used to.
Mm. We've outsourced it.
We don't keep bodies in the house. When I was a kid, you had your front room, and the front room was for Easter, Christmas, and where you put your dead bodies for the wake. And then the funeral would go from the house.
Yeah.
So, and the whole street would turn out to see somebody off, you know, and the people would... And so I've seen people clap. I've seen people, you know, cross themselves. I've seen people bow, depending on what kind of funeral it is.
Yeah. You know?
And there are some funerals that are very upbeat. They were very funny. And when the person did leave the house, there was a lot of whooping and you know, woo, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and lots of positivity about the person who's died.
Yeah.
The
Bay City Rollers in Love Actually.
Yeah. Bye bye, baby.
Although everyone's sitting there crying their eyes out.
Yeah. And some funerals that you go to are absolutely fabulous. You know, and it's such a warm, heartening thing to see the love that people have for that person who's gone, you know.
Right.
Lots of bits of elastic snapping all over the place and people getting emotional, and that's good.
Yeah. Have you had much grief to deal with process in your life?
Loads. Loads and loads and loads. I'm not going to get maudlin about this, but I had a child who died in 83 and died on my birthday, which wasn't good. And each time my birthday comes around... This is an interesting thing. I thought back in 83 that when... you lost people like that, that you would get over it. Time's a good healer kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that's not true. And my birthday's coming up in a couple of weeks' time, so it'll be with me again. And what I tend to do on that day, and it's quite okay, is I go through it. I know what was happening hour by hour on that day.
Really?
And I tend to be a bit of a clock watcher that day.
So
I get through the day, and then I get on with it.
I relive it.
Yeah, in many ways. It's as though...
Is that like... I'm not enjoyable isn't the right word, but is that something you kind of...
No, I don't think it's either. It's like, if this wall is the tapestry of my life, right, and I'm weaving this bit up here, back there, woven into to the tapestry is this loss. Yeah, now, it's a part of this big picture that is my life. I can't get rid of it. I wouldn't want to get rid of it. But it's the acceptance of the fact that it's just a part of the way life is. And one of the things you will all discover, dear listeners, is that the older you get, the more deaths you experience, the more funerals you go to, you know?
I've only been to a handful, yeah.
But your tapestry ends up being full of people that have died, you know? And as you go around the year, you can be revisiting all kinds of things.
So aside from listening to this podcast, what can we do to prepare ourselves for... Well, either our own death, which might be... It's almost a relief if you die before everyone else... But if you know that everyone you know, especially the ones older than you, are going to pass away and you're going to have to go through that, how do you prepare yourself?
Well, I think that the first thing is you need to get the most that you can out of the people while they're still here. Yeah.
Money, you talk about.
Yeah, why not?
Dad.
But like the amount of people that do the, if only, why didn't I see them more? You know, I could have done this, I could have done that. You know, and it's too late once they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things is... when people go through the dying process, they get quite immobile. Whereas in the pre-dying process, they can be, you know, you could take them somewhere, you could do things with them. So it's like, how many things are you doing with these people around you who are going to die? So, like, get the best out of them you can. Yeah.
We're funny, aren't we? Because sometimes it takes a diagnosis for something that isn't great, like cancer, but that, you know, maybe you've got 3, 5, 10 years to kind of kickstart that process. Because if you know you've got a date of 5 years-ish, all of a sudden you've got this time limit and you've got a checklist of things to do. Yeah. My resource, I'll talk about it now, is a book I just read last week called When Breath Becomes Air.
Right.
Quite a well-known book by a chap who was a surgeon, neurology, kind of, brain surgeon.
Yep.
He was just hitting the peak of his career and he was just about to be, whatever, consultant, and he was going to have his own kind of lab where he could do research and all sorts. He got diagnosed with cancer and had I think he... this isn't too... I'm not giving anything away, any spoilers. He got an extra 3 or 4 years out of life of varying degrees of wellness, and he managed to have a child in that time, and he kind of died with the child in his arms and all that, and he got to say goodbye to his family, and he got to, yeah, he was physically well enough for a lot of it to do a lot of things, even to go back to work for a while, actually.
Yeah,
amazing book. But sometimes, yeah, we need this kind of little this kick up the backside to get things done, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, which is crazy.
Whereas
very often it's too late.
Yeah.
Got 3 days, that's like no time at all, is it?
Mm.
I think that in terms of getting the best you can out of those people around you, and it could be parents, could be partners, could be all kinds of people, you know, so you don't get into the regret situation. Also your kids as well. But there's the issue of yourself. The issue of people dying and going, if only, and they feel like they let themselves down. I wanted to do this, I wanted to, I haven't done that, you know. And it's like, if you keep putting things off to tomorrow... Yeah, you can't live tomorrow, you can only live today.
Yeah.
And it's making sure you get stuff done. The other thing I think that is good to do that focuses your mind around where you are is to create your death box. You know, so you've got a box so that in the event of my death, take this box off the shelf.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
And in there is everything.
I wonder if there's an app for that. Yeah, some kind of app that unlocks and sends an email to someone. What the point of...
You can get an app that has a little skull that sits in the corner of your screen.
Okay,
what you do is you put your details in, and it uses the databases that insurance companies use, and it will tell you your expected death day, and it will count down from now to your expected death day. I looked at it, and my expected death day would be 86, they reckon.
Okay.
So
got a bit left in you yet?
Yeah, so I'll do a bit more yet. I did have the skull in the corner for a while.
Just to remind you.
It was a bit disconcerting after a bit.
It could be a happy skull. Like.
Yeah, watching the seconds tick away as well. Yeah. How long you got left?
If you do get a diagnosis like that, can you grieve for yourself? If you, you've got a year to live or 3 days, in the case of that poor lady, can that be tricky? I'm assuming that can be quite tricky to process. Is that something where we should got Rhea into chat from that side, speaking with cancer patients that have been given it?
I think she should. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I'm working with someone who's terminal at the moment, and she is amazingly positive about her ending. You know, she knows she's going.
Was she positive before
I didn't know
the diagnosis,
before,
or has it kind of kick-started it?
I think she was... what I know of her now, I think she was always a positive person.
Okay, cool.
But she she's realistic about the fact that she's going. She has a concern for the people that she'll leave behind, so she's giving me instructions as to what I need to do for the people that are left behind. And she's also aware of the fact that the things that she needs for her.
Yeah.
So, but she's...
She's not grieving for herself then?
Yeah.
Or she is she's doing it in a positive way?
When we sit and talk, she's talking about things that, you know, they are, wonder if I should have done that better, or should have done this, that kind of stuff. And going through that idea about what's going to happen to the people that are left after she's gone.
Yeah.
You know. In a quite real way.
Yeah.
And that's good, isn't it? Like, one of the things that I think would be useful as well for people, if you are serious about facing your own death, and by that I don't mean becoming kind of morbid about it, but maybe even writing your own eulogy. What would you like? Because we played this game when we did the course, didn't we? Where it's your 100th birthday, and someone's reading out a speech. What would you like them to be saying? You know, well, if you go to the extreme, you say, OK, it's my funeral, and someone's going to stand up and they're going to read this thing out.
Yep.
What would you write on it? And if you write that now, because if you're writing, maybe there'd be people you'd want to thank for what they've done for you. It may be that you're talking about things that you have achieved. Yeah. Well, if you can look at what you'd like that to be, that might mean there's things that you need to do now.
Yeah.
Maybe there are people that you need to be thanking now, that you need to be appreciative of. Maybe there are things that you do need to do and complete now.
Strengthen that elastic
now
while you can.
Yeah. Because tomorrow is a long way off, and you could be dead tomorrow. Now, that's true for any of us.
Yep.
Yeah.
What about, well, you've experienced it, but grieving for a person that hasn't even lived yet? I'm talking about, obviously, your little boy, was it?
Yeah.
I've got two friends that experienced stillbirths, and, yeah, horrendous. So grieving for a person that hasn't even had the chance to take a breath. Like,
but the weird thing is, when you're in that position, that person, however indistinct they were for other people, was very real for you. One of the things that people do these days, which I find a little bit strange, but it works for lots of people, is when they have a dead baby, it could be a stillbirth, it could be, you know, a death after birth.
Yep.
But very often they will dress the baby, and then they will do a photo album, and here's mummy with the baby, here's daddy with the baby, and all that kind of stuff, which can be a bit strange.
Yeah.
For me, it works for some people.
Yeah. Well, that's
to
it.
Process the
I've
grief.
Got friends that did something similar, and it was when you first hear it, you're like, whoa, is that best thing to do? But it's whatever. You've got to run with whatever ideas you have, I guess, and what you think's gonna.
Yeah, I was in a position where someone sat me down and said, oh, look at our album, and we went through the album of the dead baby, and that was quite disconcerting.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe I would have done the same, but I was like, is it a good idea to name that baby?
I think that's good. I've even worked with women who have had miscarriages, like late on miscarriages, who have needed to name that child, as it would have been very often they know what the gender was. So that it's like they may have three live children, but maybe in their head they've got six because they lost three. That kind of thing.
Then the elastic is strong there.
Yeah.
There's a blog post. There's a chap called Chase Reeves who I follow. He does quite a lot of cool blogging and helps people actually with digital marketing and stuff. But he lost, and his wife lost, a child on delivery. And he wrote quite a lot about it, including one a year on. Perspectives 1 year after my son's birth, death. Which is a really great read, actually. But he wrote an article not long after it had happened, including photos, nothing graphic, just, you know, very tasteful stuff, but really opened up. And maybe that's what you got to do, man. You've got to, well, you don't have to, but don't be shy about telling your story.
But that's the British thing, isn't it? It's like the shyness.
Yeah.
We keep it in, especially the fellas, and it's important to let things go.
Yep.
Let it out.
Yeah.
Tough stuff.
Yeah. Would you like to talk about your resource? Anything else you want to mention?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say something a bit controversial here, maybe.
Do it.
Right.
What's the worst that could happen?
I could die. It would appear to me, with all the work that I've done over all the years, is that life is probably reincarnative. You know, people talk about life after death. It would appear to me, from the work that I've done, I couldn't prove any of this at all, that people do come back, and that there is an intervening period in between. Now, whether you want to call that heaven or spirit, whatever you want to call that, doesn't make any difference. But one of the things that occurs to me in that, and the more I investigated this kind of stuff, it was a bit like when I did the hypnotherapy training I did. And on the very first session, the guy said to us, you shouldn't use this hypnotherapy for regression, which was like red rag to a bull. So we all went out and started regressing each other. But like I say, the work I've done would suggest to me, in lots of different areas, that life is like that. But if that's true, this is the one that is the weirdest, but it's the one that I kind of live with, is that death doesn't happen. If it's true that people live after their bodies stop working, then what we call death is actually someone's body stopping working. It's not them ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, that may sound completely fanciful.
Yeah.
But for me, over the years, that's the way it's become.
I'm with that. I'm interested in exploring that idea. Yeah. I like the idea that someone can live on through other people, like through their spirit, if you want to call it that, or their mannerisms. It's easier now because obviously there's photos and videos of everyone everywhere. There was a journalist just on Twitter this morning that I follow, and he put a couple of screen grabs of profiles of fellow journalists that have died, but their Twitter profiles are still there. Just kind of, it's as if they're still, obviously there's nothing being updated on there, you can kind of dip in and out of this thought process whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of immortal in some weird way.
Mm.
I'm quite interested in the idea.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 But it's the kind of thing that whatever theories we have, no one's going to be able to confirm them for us until we die. And then we'll know.
Yeah, you can do cool things. You can, you know, where someone's buried, you can plant a tree and watch the tree grow from that spot, and then birds land on that tree, and butterflies and squirrels and all that, and they become those animals.
Yeah.
Or that tree, or those seeds and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And if people's bodies are decaying and their atoms are going off into the universe, you know, might be breathing the atoms from Napoleon as we speak.
Who knows, man, yeah. All right, what's your resource on that note?
Well, it follows on from what I'm saying. It's there are various books, and Tibetan Buddhism has a kind of a reincarnated philosophy about it. So this book is the Book of Living and Dying. So you get the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and then you get the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. So, it's an interesting way of looking at different ideas of what happens after you die. No.
Cool.
Like I say, does anybody know?
I don't think we do, or ever will we? But
no.
It's fun trying to think about it and figure it out.
Yeah.
When Breath Becomes Air is my resource, the book I mentioned. You got to read it. The guy who, he did write a lot of it in the final few months of his life, because he was just desperate to get out there, and he knew that he had a story to tell and he needed to tell it. So he's got it. It's a must read.
Yep.
Top notch. And we're all done, aren't we?
Yep.
Livingthepresent.co.uk. Lots of resources and links and books mentioned this week. All previous episodes on the website as well. And yeah, if there's anything you would like us to talk about, just drop us an email or a message on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll stick it in the list and get right on it.
Yep.
Sean, you have a good week.
And you.
See you later.
Take care. See ya. Bye.